Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Beast, the new movie that if you've seen the trailers, you know is about Idris Elba fighting a lion. And I was really looking forward to this movie. I thought it looked great, and I kind of had low expectations, even though I thought it looked great, but I ended up loving it, and we've got a great conversation coming up. Joining me is Dwight from the Broken Brain podcast, and we get into a lot of good puzzle pieces here. Obviously, a lot of man versus nature, man versus beast stuff, but lots of other stuff too. So that is coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together, wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, rate and review us. 5 stars would be nice. You can also find me on social media at PiecingPod. Love to hear from you, so get in touch. And we also have the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces Facebook group, where we do continue the conversation about all these movies and everything else going on in the world of movies. So check it out. It's Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces on Facebook. So let's talk about Beast. All right, we are going to talk about Beast, and we've got Dwight Hurst from The Broken Brain joining us today. Dwight, how's it going?
Going well. And well, especially I got to be on a cool podcast today, or am getting to.
Hey, there we go. It's like a safari into the worlds of podcasting. And, yeah.
Hopefully it goes better than it did for Idris Elba's family.
I have a feeling this will be a little smoother sailing for sure. Although maybe I could be your own personal Charlotte Copley here and be a good weirdo to take you along. But it is your first time on the show. Why don't you tell people a little about you and your podcast?
Certainly. Yeah, I am a psychotherapist by training, by job and all that. And got into podcasting in about 2015-ish, I think. I always forget. I have to go back and look when the show started. And other than a few months of hiatus somewhere in the middle there, it's been going pretty strong. What the show is, The Broken Brain, is all about taking an interest in life by looking at things through a psychological and cultural lens. So look at all kinds of things a lot. Obviously, with my background and interests, a lot of it is about mental health treatment, addiction and trauma come up quite a bit. But then also we talk about pop culture and utilize that and look at the psychological aspects of, say, you know, sometimes, you know, a Marvel movie. I've an occasional co-host who comes on, she's actually a former health minister from Canada, but she's just as big into Marvel nerddom as I am. So she comes on and talks about that. Mm-hmm. Then I have a lot of guests that are researchers and psychiatrists and psychologists that also come on and talk about their projects as well. So anything psychological, pop culture, or creative artists, things like that. Just kind of trying to make the world, emphasize that the world is not boring, basically.
Yeah, sure. And it must be like extra ridiculous for you when you hear people like, you know, why do they have to have all these psychological issues in movies nowadays, as if they weren't always there, always baked into every story, you know?
Yeah, no, it really is true. I think when it's like the myth, you know, there's mythology that, well, what happened to the big action heroes and what happened? It goes right along with some of the mythology we have about let's say, like, male emotionality. We tend to say, well, mm-hmm. women are emotional and men aren't. And it's like, really? I mean,
yeah.
You ever talk to a guy about the method that they have for how to load the dishwasher, or how to drive the lawnmower, or, you know, how anything to do with money or anything that has to do with a system that dads tend to come up with? And they get very emotional, sure. right? Yeah. I ever see a guy who is, you know, addicted or alone, right? They're very emotional. So, yeah. And yeah. well, and, you know, and we'll get into today's, but one of the things that I thought is interesting that even in a movie, and we'll talk about how much we want to say if this is like, you know, where this movie rates or whatever, but it is definitely the kind of movie that could just be very straightforward, punch 'em up action. And I thought that one of the things that deepened it was the use of emotion and trauma
sure.
and even the shedding of tears throughout the adventure, which is a little more realistic than whatever. I'm just stoic, you know? So I
yeah,
exactly like you said, you know,
I could take on any lion that comes at me.
right.
I'm tough. Yeah, well, you know, speaking of the movie, this was your pick to join me on the podcast for. Was this one you were, like, looking forward to? Was it something that interested you because of the man versus beast nature of it, or is it the Idris Elba nature of it? What was it about it that appealed to you at first?
Well, I'll say complete disclosure is that of the list of movies you gave me that were coming up for the show, it was the one that was most interesting of that list.
Sure. So yeah. it's a weird couple of months, I gotta say. Yeah. Like, August is a wasteland, and September is a little better. But
I will say, though, it reminded me. I'm sure whoever gets to go first is going to say a particular movie that I do really enjoy. Mm-hmm. We'll see if I'm right about that. But so it did remind me of that. The preview when I looked at it, which I hadn't really even heard of it till you listed it as one of the options.
Okay.
When I watched the preview, it looked like it had some jump scare worthy stuff. And I was like, you know, in the preview, they show that bit where the lion's rushing towards the car and he closes the door just sure. in time. And even though much of it turned out to not be super realistic, that part got me, because I was like, well, it looked like he was far enough away that he might have made it to the car before the lion hit him. So yeah, that usually is not the maybe. Case, you know?
So. Yeah, just maybe. Well, we might as well get into some of those pieces. Let's have you go first. What do you have for your first one?
Gosh, do I get to go first? So that means yes, I get to take the ghost it. In the darkness.
There you go. Thank you. Also on my list, although I haven't seen it since it first came out, so it's been a long time, so I'm glad you're bringing this one to the table.
What a great adventure movie, right? You got Val Kilmer, mm-hmm. you got Michael Douglas, and anything with Tom Wilkinson is usually automatically wonderful.
Yeah.
But no, it's, you know, for those, anybody who doesn't know, you know, it's a story of Val Kilmer plays an engineer who has been brought to Africa to build a bridge over a big chasm kind of thing. And they start having these lion attacks. And one of the reasons that it ties directly into this one is it, although it based off of a true story, there were these two lions, I guess, in the true story that were attacking and killing people in ways that lions generally do not. And the sure. Michael Douglas character, big game hunter guy, was like, this is weird. Lions don't bring trophies back to caves. And apparently that part was true. Mm-hmm. And they have the lions stuffed in the Smithsonian, who were the real lions from this. They didn't get them to play themselves in the movie, however.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, didn't work out well for them in the end.
I thought one of the interesting things about it from the last time I did watch it a few years ago is that it does have a little bit of commentary on colonialism, where it seems to be very aware of itself. Tom Wilkinson's character is like, well, we're here to save Africa from itself, and we're here to, you know, civilize this place. And there was, I felt like in a way they used the lion attacks to kind of be like, that's not, number one, you know, don't come in like that. And maybe number sure. two, it's not like this is a broken place. It, you know.
Right, so. Right. There's a lot of culture clash, but there's a lot of, like, you know, respect this place that you're showing up to. And like, you don't know this place and you better show respect or else something like this could potentially happen. And I need to revisit The Ghost in the Darkness, because yeah, I remember it being great, and definitely it's one that I think is kind of the perfect one to start this conversation off with. I'm gonna go from one that's based on a true story and like a little bit more realistic, even though it's still insane that that is a true story. Mm-hmm. Like that's wild. But I'm going to go to one that is completely made up, but no less amazing. It's Jurassic Park.
Yeah. There, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's lots of Jurassic Park in here. I mean, from the entering a nature preserve where everything is just absolutely beautiful, but also dangerous and scary, and you better follow the rules or things are not going to go well, you know? And then, of course, everything being centered around a Jeep, and then the animals attacking the Jeep and being stuck inside the Jeep. Eventually, it falls off a cliff.
That's which, what reminded you know, me, tipped me off to it, too, is like the falling thing. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And then I'll combine with Jurassic Park rather than make it its own piece, Jurassic World. The not as good fourth entry, the reboot slash sequel that happened about, I don't know, 6 years ago. We just had the third of the Jurassic World series this year. But by the end of the movie, really all there was that could be done is allow the other beasts, in that case, the other Tyrannosaurus Rex from the first Jurassic Park, to fight this new giant, insane dinosaur that was coming after them. And so they kind of really had no options left other than let them fight and get the hell out of the way. And so I thought that would be, that kind of lines up with Idris Elba's plan at the end of this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. That was one bit that I, even though I did feel like the end of the movie, we're spoiler friendly here, right? Is that?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So at the end of the movie, there was a bit of punch him up with the, maybe that went on a bit too long. It lost a little credibility with the physical fighting with the lion. I did like, and it was fairly well broadcast that what his plan was once he got to the pride. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Right.
Cause sure.
They told him earlier in foreshadowing that, that the lions would protect their own pride from this lion. So I thought that was actually a clever bit. And I wondered also if part of the reason they did that is, were they feeling guilty? Because one thing I couldn't help think was, is it a bit irresponsible to have another haunted lion story, especially one that's fictional? I mean, because you can go back to the Ghost in the Darkness being true and being like, wow, these two lions, crazy, right? Whereas this one's, so to have it, it's kind of like when you watch Shark Week and they're like, oh, sharks are really safe and they're beautiful creatures. Now let's have this special about how they're going to rip you to shreds, you know? And it's like, sure, is that irresponsible?
Yeah. And I
wonder if that's why they had lions save him as well.
And it's pretty clear that they're painting this lion, even though it's like completely vicious and violent and murderous. Like they're showing that like it's responding to the violence that's been inflicted upon its family by the poachers. And so like to make it out to be a victim and then like make it this villain creature as well at the same time wouldn't quite work. So it's like, yeah, like he can't just straight up shoot and kill
the lion, right? Especially as he's an American doctor visiting Africa, that probably wouldn't go over well.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
You know, what also reminded me of Jurassic Park was how the velociraptors, open the doors and they learn how to use stuff.
Oh yeah.
But when the lion used the walkie-talkie, I thought that was, I mean, I know he stepped on it accidentally, but when all of a sudden over the walkie-talkie they heard, I was like, wait, did this lion just figure out how to use a walkie-talkie?
See, it seems like that make me really like this movie a lot, because I mean, that's the kind of thing you're just like, hell yeah, that's great, you know, like, what a great idea. You
expect him
you
to know? Like start
it's ridiculous.
Up, but he like starts up the poacher's car.
Yeah, then this would be five stars to push start if that had happened. But yeah, well, let's go on to some more pieces. What do you got for your next one?
Well, here's one: the Predator, the original Predator movie. And that popped in my head, of course, knowing that they're going to be hunted when they get there and they have the very manly handshake. All of a sudden, it took me back to Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger doing their like bro half hug, you know, hand clasp before they go out to fight terrorists. And so here's a group of people who are like, we're highly trained. We know what we're doing. We're going to go out and, you know, kill these terrorists or whatever they did before, you know, some mission. A MacGuffin mission where before the Predator started picking them off. And I felt, and also the Predator being highly intelligent, whereas this lion also was like lying in wait. It was using their Australian friend as bait.
Sure.
And so I don't know. So it reminded me of the dynamic in Predator.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I mean, obviously this past month we also got Prey, this new Predator prequel, which was great. And we talked about that here on the show.
I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch that one.
It's really good. Really definitely recommended. But when we got the trailers for that and Beast and knowing they were coming the same month, I mean, they both looked like they both shared that Predator kind of DNA to them of, you know, being out lost, you know, completely outpowered by this creature that's out there. And then also a lot of CGI animals in both. So like you kind of have that and like kind of relying on the technology of making sure that looks good, because if it doesn't, it's kind of going to fall apart a little bit. And I think they really did a great job in both of these movies with the animals. So absolutely. The Predator, I think, is a great one. I'll go to one that I hadn't seen since I was a kid, and I just rewatched it this week and absolutely loved it. It's Cujo.
There you go.
I think it's a perfect comparison to this movie, really. I mean, again, we were just talking about how this lion, you know, it's had all this wrong done to him, and he doesn't want to necessarily be this killing machine, but, you know, all this shit outside of his power happens, and so here he comes now. He's going to kill everything in his path. And then our heroes have to hide in a car, and it just absolutely demolishes that car through the rest of the runtime. And they are just totally, you know, stuck in there. And there's just no getting out, because otherwise they're going to get totally ruined, just like the car eventually does. You also have a lot of like human relationship drama that kind of pads out both of these stories, I would say. I mean, we got all the dream sequences here in Beast about the wife who has passed away, whereas in Cujo we've got the infidelity in the family. So there's different stories going on, but still, like it's not just a straightforward shoot 'em up action thing against a giant monster. It's, you know, something with a lot of character work as well. And then the last thing is then when our hero does get out of the car and has to fight hand to hand against this thing, just gets messed up. Like, you know, when she is just getting mauled by Cujo and, you know, survives, but is getting just bitten to hell. And of course, Idris Elba, if he didn't fight that lion hand to hand, I mean, I would have had to have rioted. Like, that's what I was being sold by the trailer. And so we finally get it at that point. And regardless of how ridiculous it is, it's everything we wanted at that point.
And you gotta love the very end when he's walking with a cane, like with a slight limp. It's like, wow, good out of that encounter, dude.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of scratches and a cane, that's all. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great. Oh, man. Well, what do you got for your next one?
Well, let's see. I had a couple of them that seemed a bit funny that popped in my head, but one of them was Real Steel. If you remember that movie with Hugh Jackman.
I don't think I ever actually saw it. I remember it, though.
It's a boxing robot movie, so automatically mm-hmm. people know the tie-in here. No, not really, but the tie-in that it reminded me of was, here's a guy with a very particular world that is part of his world, and in this movie you got Idris Elba, who has a history of coming to Africa. That's where he met his wife, and I don't think we're ever revealed exactly all the stuff that he did there, but he seems to be... Mm-hmm. While not super knowledgeable and comfortable with the landscape and things, he does know some stuff and is, you know, knows where his limitations are as well. But anyway, but the real part about Real Steel that reminded me was, there's a guy, he works in this like robot boxing, which is a very particular world that his kid doesn't understand, but he is estranged, certainly more estranged than Idris Elba is in this movie, but it's a reunite with your kid when you were a lackadaisical or neglecting parent movie, really.
Sure.
Not necessarily automatically having the skills. That's, even though it was another movie that was kind of silly, and that's maybe another thing it reminded me. I think it's a strength in movies when you're watching the movie and saying, dude, just say this. Don't tell your friend. Go to your daughter and mm-hmm. tell her, I'm really sorry and I feel bad and everything. And when you're in an unhealthy mode in your life, you might even know that you should, but you don't do that usually. And so I think it's a strength in movies when they don't say the right thing in the situation right away. And he never really does get better at talking to his kids that we see. He just, they just trauma bond. And
sure,
you know, and from the, and they do care. I think that's there too. So anyway, that reminded me of it.
No, that's an interesting one. Like, it's like, yeah, it's that same kind of needing to reconnect and doing it in a very specific and like not very unusual kind of situation for that reconnection to happen. And yeah, I like that. That's a good one. That's actually kind of goes along with my next piece, which is also maybe a little bit of an odd one, but No Escape from 2015 with Owen Wilson, where he takes his family for a job. He has to travel to this country. It's somewhere in Asia. I forget exactly where. But as soon as they get there, they find out that the country's like under a terrorist attack, and he has to keep his family safe, and all this chaos just erupting around him. Huh. And, you know, this isn't a terrorist attack. It's a crazy over-the-top lion attack. But still, he's got to keep his family safe.
Still terrorizing.
Yeah, he's still getting terrorized. And then he's got to you know, keep his family together and keep them safe and, you know, survive this insane over-the-top situation they've gotten themselves into. And yeah, I mean, it's not really the most memorable movie from what I remember. Like, you know, but like it's...
I never saw it.
Yeah, I saw it opening weekend, and like, you know, it's one of those where you saw it like the one time and that was it. But Owen Wilson's great though. So
yeah, and that's an interesting role to see Owen Wilson in.
That's
one of the things I enjoyed about Loki, the TV series, is that Owen Wilson had a chance to show off some acting skills that weren't just comedic. And so it's interesting to see him in a role that isn't you know, his traditional. So that's pretty cool.
Well, absolutely. What do you got next?
I've got, this one's real specific, and it's Die Hard. So,
oh, nice.
And it's a very specific part of Die Hard. The most annoying part of Die Hard is the, I don't know what, I don't even remember his name, Hans or something. He's the blonde, long-haired terrorist who gets, like, his death at first is he's fighting John McClane. McClane kills his brother early on, so they have this beef, and he's going after him, and you know, he's fighting him and fighting him, and he ends up hanging him with a chain after just beating him to hell. And so that's how he dies. But then, but then there's this bit at the end where Reginald Val Johnson, of course, has to learn to have the courage to kill again, I guess, you know, because it's an 80s action movie. And he's a desk cop. So his opportunity to save people by shooting a guy is that terrorist. And this is after not only was he hanged by a chain, but the roof blows up on the building. And at the end, for no reason, he emerges from the wreckage of the exploded building on the ground. If you remember anyone listening to this, jumps up with a machine gun and then bang, you know, Reginald Val Johnson takes him out.
Sure.
And so this is where, and at that point, you're just kind of like, all right, whatever, you know, what in the world? How, why even have him? It could have been anyone. It could have just been some rando guy. There's no way you could at all, not just, I mean, it goes beyond kind of action movie, physics to say, okay, you could have had him die a little different to bring him back. And when the lion resurrects itself from being immolated, that was the part that, you know, it's got, it's in the car that blows up in a fireball. And the next time you see it, it's just kind of like, whatever, get a little charcoal marks on its mane.
Yeah, just a little brushing the shoulder off, and
and the long flowing blonde hair, I think, also reminded me of the mane of the lion.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Anyway,
yeah, no, that's great. I, you know, I was gonna bring up the Rambo sequels, but we already got Die Hard and we got Predator in there, so we'll leave that one alone. I'll move on to something kind of reminiscent of what I was talking about with Jurassic World, but you know, obviously, we talked before we even got into this conversation about how we could talk about a lot of different man versus creature movies. There's tons of them over the years. I thought I'd bring up Crawl from just a couple of years ago, where a woman has to survive against a bunch of gators during a hurricane.
Oh, okay.
And it's a really fun movie produced by Sam Raimi, and it very, very exciting, very tense, you know, action. And in the end, I mean, basically, there's no fighting an alligator. I mean, she's got to basically get it out to where it's, you know, it's it's not going to have any kind of upper hand advantage anymore because it's out kind of like stuck in the, you know, like the current of the rapids from the hurricane and all that. But yeah, she's got to lure him out there. And that way that nobody will have an advantage anymore at that point. And so, you know, again, we talked about it, how that's kind of part of Idris's plan here at the end. And it's a great plan because, I mean, really, there's no other way that he's going to be able to beat this thing. And so it reminded me a little bit of that plan there, like to really kind of outthink your situation there rather than trying to straight up fight back in an action movie way.
It's interesting when you say, now, do you think this is a double standard thing, guy and gal, where you say she's not going to fight a crocodile as a lady, but you know, Idris Elba might be, you know, like suplexing the,
well, he got a few good punches in, but you know, overall, no, he didn't have a chance.
I will say it almost like if they really, and I'm with you. I mean, I think that if they wanted realism, they already had lost that by that point with the fireball and everything. But the length, the amount of time that the fight was going on with the lion and the lack of death that he experienced, you know, they could have easily just had him run in across the pride and, oh, here they come. But it's more like they're watching for like 20 minutes.
We're waiting for that moment, you know. Like I said, it had to happen. Yeah. So regardless of how ridiculous or how unrealistic it is, it just kind of had to happen.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But what do you got for your next one?
Well, and so this one, I think this kind of ties into two. I didn't want to make them separate, but I'm going to go with the. It's a certain ending trope, but that is used in this movie that I think is exemplified in many, many movies, but. Let's go with the movie Panic Room. If you remember the movie Panic Room, in the very ending, it's Jodie Foster, and I don't recall who plays her daughter in that movie, but they are sitting on a park bench looking at one ads for a new apartment, and there's just this air of like calm, peaceful confidence. And what I always took from it was, well, we've been through hell, and if we can go through that, we're fine. We're not worried about anything anymore. And there's this kind of like settledness to it that is just a confidence. And I think that's a trope that's in movies to where it's like, hey, let's go back out onto the plains and take a picture of this tree. When in real life, at least one out of the three, I would think is like, hell no, I'm not going back. Are you kidding me? I'm not going back out on the plains the next day.
Not even getting on an airplane anymore.
Exactly. Like, you wanna, so, you know, that is something that is present in a lot of movies, but it reminded me of this old movie from the 80s called Fortress. So I'm going to...
Have I seen Fortress? I've heard of this movie. I don't think I've ever seen it, though.
It's a creepy, weird movie where it takes place in Australia, and there's these criminals who take a teacher and her class out into the outback. I don't remember why. They kidnap them for ransom, maybe? I don't know, but... Pretty soon the teacher and the kids kind of escape. And then there's this like hunt and chase where it's one of these old movies where the bad guys are wearing like goofy, creepy masks. One of them has like a Santa Claus mask. I remember it was just absolutely terrifying. But the reason that
Kurtwood Smith's in it. Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And Christopher Lambert, isn't it too?
So, you know, and the interesting thing, and so this takes that trope I just mentioned and amps it up a little bit, speaking of the confidence. There's two real strange things that they made choices about. One is that the ending, they keep setting up traps for these bad guys, and if I remember right, they kill a few of them with traps. But the end movie is like the kids, like, kill the remaining bad guys, like they beat them to death, if I remember, or just advance on them. And and then there's, so the actual ending of the movie though is some guy comes into the school, and as far as I remember, he was like some government official who's like, oh, we might have to close the school, or he's like vaguely threatening the school. And there's this weird moment where the teacher and the kids all kind of watch him, like, and there's some kind of like jars on the wall that look like they might have organs in them. And there's like, there's this, just this weird vibe of like, he leaves very, very scared. And you're just kind of like, oh, he's not coming back because he'll get killed by this classroom.
Sure. Yeah.
So that to me is the maybe upping the ante a bit of this ending, which is like, we're fine now. We've been through the worst that can happen and we're just not scared anymore. Which is interestingly not always how trauma works.
Sure. I wouldn't think so. Yeah. Like you said, I can't even imagine like flying again after like being in that kind of a situation. And it's definitely a movie thing. But at the same time, and this actually kind of like adds into my final puzzle piece here, because it is very much a movie, you know, and that's one of the things I like about it. We don't get enough of these nowadays. And like earlier this year, we got like The Lost City, which is, it's fine. Like, it was fun. You know, the main thing about it that I liked, though, is that it's a movie, you know, it feels like that kind of throwback to when movies were just straight up movies. And that's what this feels like, too. And that's why I like this. And my last puzzle piece is actually not a movie, but something that celebrates movies. And that's the Universal Studios tour at Universal Studios. There are moments in this movie, because first of all, you know, shout out to the cinematographer, because some of the cinematography in this is just so damn good. And not just like wide shots or anything like that, but some of these like really tense, exciting shots within the car as the lion is attacking, also combined with the sound design and all the just crunching, you know, glass inside of the car and all that stuff and the lion roar. There's moments where like the camera is disorientingly like shifting all across, and you hear the lion roaring over on the right, and then you hear Idris Elba yelling, "Kids, hang on the left," and then you hear the girls screaming, "Ah, Dad," you know, and then the lion smashes against the car, and like you don't know what's happening. Totally reminds me of like the King Kong part of the Universal Studios ride, or the Fast and Furious part of the Universal Studios ride, or the part where they flood the underground, where you're on a train and all the water comes in. Like, it's just that theme park kind of experience that like really made this just a really fun movie to me. And it's kind of my favorite thing about it.
That's a good point. I was watching something the other day, just something from the 90s, and, you know, rewatching a couple things and thinking about that fact where it's like, if you want a movie that is a self-contained, somebody had an idea for a story and wrote it or whatever, yeah, and then made a movie out of it, and it's not based off of a million other things, and it's not going to be part of a extended universe, yeah, and things. And don't get me wrong, I'm a stand for a lot of those. I love Marvel and I love those kinds of things.
I see them all.
But, you know, but it is interesting because I thought to myself, like, oh, here's a charming little, I think I was watching The Freshman, that old Matthew Broderick movie, if anybody remembers that. Yeah. Marlon Brando. It's a sort of parody off of like Godfather Crimes and things, but at the same time, kind of a fun, charming comedy.
And yeah, I should rewatch that. I haven't seen that in a million
years. Yeah. It's the one where they have to transport a Komodo dragon, supposedly through in a car, and it's got some fun little bits in it, and it's very young Matthew Broderick, and then Bruno Kirby plays just a wonderful kind of scumbag character for comedy, which, you know, is kind of his sweet spot. But anyway, it occurred to me, it's like if I was going to see this movie made nowadays, it would have to be at like Sundance, or you know it would have to be like an indie film that was just completely aside from some of those things. You probably get, so if someone famous is in it, they're probably doing it for scale because they love the script or it's just a different dynamic. And I'm not one of those big blockbuster haters necessarily, because I do think there's strengths. You see some directors and people get work with bigger movies sooner because of some of these franchises. So there's these pros and cons though, to where you're absolutely right. Just the going to the movies, getting the popcorn, watching this one shot story of like, it's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah,
that's not, you don't see it as much anymore. It's true.
Right. Absolutely. And I think we need to celebrate these ones because, you know, Marvel movies are great. Superhero movies are great, but we need this other stuff too in our movie watching diet.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So do you have any more pieces you wanted to bring up?
Like you said, there's a bunch that occurred to me, like The Edge is one that occurred, but it's just kind of a more straightforward man versus, there's a funny old, it's an old cheesy Disney movie called Cheetah, for anyone who saw it. It would be like The Wonderful World of Disney, but it stood out to me. It's not man versus nature. What it is it's actually the opposite, which is a bond with a wildcat, but it is kids who are brought to Africa by family. They really fall in love with it, and they sort of domesticate, accidentally raise this cheetah who was left alive when all the others were killed by poachers. And so there's a heavy poacher, you know, anti-poacher message. Well, I mean, most movies with poachers have an anti wrinkle. Sure. There's not
they're
a lot of
they're not usually the heroes. Yeah. But yeah, that's good though that you brought that up, because I couldn't really think of any poacher related movies. So yeah, that's a good one there.
Yeah. And what was that other one with John Lithgow? I should have said that instead of Cheetah. The elephant preservation movie. Good grief.
Oh.
I can't believe I said Cheetah.
I don't even know if I remember it.
There's one where it's about ivory smuggling, and it's very unsatisfying for me to not have the name of that for people. But...
Let's see. It's called Ivory Hunters.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remembered that. Just popped in my head, but I remember seeing that on like a Saturday afternoon on TV when I was a teenager, and it was one of the first things that made me think like there's a part in it where the guy's talking to John Lithgow, one of the guys who's an advocate, and John Lithgow is just some guy who starts getting involved in this elephant preservation stuff, and the guy says to him, like, it's not the poachers shooting the elephants that I blame, it's the guy who says the concert pianist who won't play the piano unless it has ivory keys.
Good line.
Yeah. And so that really got me thinking about social advocacy at a young age that I'd never thought of before. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's better than Cheetah. Gosh, we'll add it out, Cheetah. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll keep them both on the list. Why not? Yeah. Right on. Well, I'm going to go ahead and read down the list of everything we just talked about, and we'll get into some closing thoughts.
Nice.
But we talked about The Ghost in the Darkness, Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, The Predator, Cujo, Real Steel, No Escape, Die Hard, Crawl, Panic Room, Fortress, the Universal Studios Tour, The Edge, Cheetah, and Ivory Hunters, which, by the way, was also known as The Last Elephant. So
that's a hell of a film festival we put together.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, you could, like I said, you could go into so many, you could bring up Jaws, you could bring up like any man versed a big version of an animal kind of a movie, like really will fit this. I mean, that's what you go to a movie like this for, is to see that kind of thing. You mentioned The Edge in there, another one that I haven't seen in a million years, but I remember loving when it came out in the 90s. Do you have any other like thoughts on the movie that you wanted to get out there before we wrap it up?
Well, and you know, and I think it is important to point out that unrealism is a part of any action movie, whether you notice it or not. And especially these man versus nature things, there's always some silliness that's wrapped up in there in the terms of it being unrealistic. So I guess I just want to throw that out there, because I feel like although Idris Elba is beloved by most, you know, good movie fans, a lot of people like him, obviously, but he's been, you know, he gets under fire now and again when people bring up things like, oh, he should be or should have been James Bond by now, at least for a few movies and all those things, which I'm actually on board with. That would have been pretty fantastic. But whenever, you know, that's brought up, some of the more toxic movie fandom wants to pick at him and pick it just like they do any performer of color. I don't mean to, I won't say that I've heard any specific criticism of this movie because of that, but I would just say that in our world where at the very least people pick apart movies quite a lot, I hope people will, you watch this and just say, yeah, you know what? Nobody can do what they do in action movies. So let him wrestle with a lion for a while and come out of it okay.
Yeah, I don't know how to make those people happy, really. Like, I mean, what more could you possibly want than Idris Elba against a lion? Like, seriously.
I think being unhappy is like their hobby.
It really is. It really does seem that way. Only other thing I wanted to shout out is the Stephen Price score, which I loved the music in this movie. He doesn't score a lot of movies. I don't know what it is. He's like maybe like one every 4 or 5 years or something like that. He did Gravity a few years ago. It's another fantastic score. But
no, that's true. I
loved the music in this movie. So
the production value and the acting really was. I mean, that's what makes it even more enjoyable than just.
Yeah.
It's not just purely a silly movie. It's fun to watch the people because they're good performers and it's well put together. Yeah. It sounds nice and looks nice.
Yeah. Speaking of people who don't do things very often, Charlotte Copley has carved out a really weird career post District 9, where everybody thought he was going to I don't know exactly what they thought he was going to do, but I don't think it's what he's doing. Randomly popping up.
He's the District 9 guy. I couldn't. I was like, where have I seen him recently or before? Yeah.
It wasn't recently, probably, because he just pops up here, he pops up there. Like, he's a very weird guy, but very interesting and always a fun presence in movies. So, yeah, a lot of great performances here and a lot of good stuff all around. But I think that does it for Beast. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I just think recently. I'm gonna go ahead and put in a plug for a couple of animated movies this year that have come out recently. I think that Lightyear got a lot of flack and people didn't really care for it too much. But I will say, as an adventure movie, an adventure sci-fi movie, and even one that got a little people were saying that it wasn't as emotionally tugging on their heart like a lot of the Pixar. And, you know, I get it. I mean, I can't even, you know, talk about the Toy Story movies or the, you know, Onward, some of those ones that are really emotional. But I thought it had a lot of heart to it, and I thought they did a good job. And then, you know, I'll come in with Turning Red also. Mm-hmm. And so that's another one that I think the best animated is going to be a tough one this year, just like it was the year before. Whether it's for the awards or just people's opinions and, you know, Letterboxd or whatever. Yeah. But Turning Red is one that I really liked for anyone who watches it, but especially like my 7-year-old was watching it and cluing into, oh, there's some issues of maturation and menstruation that are discussed just, you know, normally, and it wasn't anything to be ashamed of. And then also just a great story that unfortunately a lot of people are like, well, I can't relate to these girls or whatever, when in fact there's a whole community that you're introduced to through it, and just, yeah, really enjoyed those.
Yeah, great picks, and I love Turning Red. I wish that was the one that got the theatrical release, honestly, of those two Pixar films, but both worth watching, and great picks there. So, awesome. This was a fun conversation. Why don't you tell people again where they could find you and your podcast?
Yeah, you can go on to, anywhere where you get podcasts. It's The Broken Brain. And, subscribe there on Apple or Spotify or whatever you use to get podcasts. It'll be on there. As far as social media goes, I am at BreakABrain on Twitter, and Facebook.com/BreakABrain is the Facebook page. And then I just recently started an Instagram, which is actually BreakABrain was taken on Instagram. So I went at Brainiacs Ahoy, which... Ooh. I just call the listeners Brainiacs, and those are also the tiers on our Patreon. For those who want to get involved, you can become a different level of Brainiac with different rewards.
Nice.
So, just doing some interesting things. We just did a book club recently, and we're going to try to make that every month or every other month. We're going to review a different book, and we were able to have the author of A Stream to Follow, which is a historical fiction about World War II and PTSD recovery. Written actually by a psychiatrist and novelist. So we've been doing some exciting things like that.
Awesome. Well, I'm really happy to have you on the show, Dwight, and hopefully we can get you back again sometime.
Definitely. And I'm hoping to get you over on mine as well. We'll do that.
Absolutely. we'll make that happen. I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years, and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Beast. Thanks to Dwight for joining me on that one. Check out the Broken Brain podcast. And thank you to you for listening. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, of course, make sure you're subscribed. We'd also really appreciate that 5-star rating and review. And, share the show. We really love it when you do that. Get in touch. Let us know about any puzzle pieces you think we might have missed There's obviously tons and tons of other things that we could have brought up. So shoot me a message either by email, the email's in the show notes, or on Twitter at PiecingPod, or over in our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Or now you could actually comment on Good Pods right there on the episode. There's a little message thing where you can comment. Let me know puzzle pieces you think of for the movies we're talking about. And I will read them on the next trailer episode. So definitely get in touch. And also wanted to let you know, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I combine bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, as well as stuff from Awesome Movie Year and from my music career. And speaking of my music career, I'm going to play a song to finish up the episode like I always do. And I was going to play Devil. I've played it on the show before. It would have been a good fit. But, you know, we're talking about Beast. We're talking about this big lion, a giant cuddly cat. I'm going to play something from my Pup Pups album, which needs to get released one of these days. It's just been sitting there like 80% done. I just need to finish it. It's just on the back burner. It's this kind of novelty album of songs. Some by my pets and some just by me about my pets. And I'm going to play one of the ones that's by me, and it's about my cat Lily Bear who passed away. It's called Muffin Maker. And this is like a kind of a bluesy rocker kind of, I guess. And it's about Lily, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And I hope you enjoy it. And this album, The Pup Pups, Who Wants Din Din, will be out one day. I don't know when. Maybe this year, maybe next year. Hopefully before they're all gone. But yeah, it's coming one of these days. So hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Hey there, little kitty. Why don't you make me something? Come on over here. You make me something. Climb up upon my belly and I make some muffin. You know that there is something. There's something I've been eating. I see you over there, just baking and eating. I know you got that recipe for making something so tasty. So why don't you come on over here and just make a batch for me? Hey there, little kitty. Why don't you make me something? Come on over here and just make some muffins. Hey there, little kitty. Why don't you make me something? Come up upon my belly and I'll make some muffins. You might call it baking bread. You might call it making biscuits. But whatever you call it, baby, you know they're making something delicious. I said, hey there, little kitty. Why don't you make
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.